WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Friday. That's right, TGIF. Can you believe it's already here? Friday, September 16th, 2016. We've got a fantastic hour of sports talk fun in store for all of our listeners out there. On today's show, of course, we will get you suited and booted for that Michigan State and Notre Dame game that will take place tomorrow night on the road for MSU. It's going to be a fun one, folks. We will cover all angles and break down what you need to know as the Spartans head into game two of its very young year. Don't want to miss that. Also, we'll give you a preview of the Michigan and Colorado game as Michigan sits at 2-0 on the season and will take on Colorado at home. We also have a dynamite interview, folks. We will invite to the show Joanne C. Gerstner, as well as Dr. Jeffrey S. Kucher. They have a new book entitled Back in the Game, Why Concussion Doesn't Have to End Your Athletic Career. They cover the topic of concussions as it relates to sports like really no other. Okay, so they'll be in studio to talk about this new book. And again, for parents out there, especially listening, they really break it down into just really give you a look as to what you need to know to make sure that your son or daughter are fully engaging in the world of sports in a healthy manner. So you don't want to miss that chat. And also on the back end of the show, we will have Reflection Friday for you, as well as bring our NFL picks to the table. So all of that and so much more. If you want to be a part of today's show, you know how you can do that. Again, just simply pick up that phone and dial 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, starting off, let's give you all a bit of a rundown of some of the big games that will be taking place tonight in high school football mid-Michigan action. Now, this week's slate of Friday night high school football is full of meaningful matchups. In Division 5, third-ranked Lansing Catholic will be on the road at fifth-ranked Portland, the matchup of two 3-0 teams. It's one of the biggest games tonight and will play a huge role in the CAAC White Division matchup. That's going to be a fantastic game, folks. In Division 3, DeWitt, who has won 39 straight conference games, is at 8th-ranked and undefeated Mason. Lansing Everett travels on the road to take on Holt. St. John's at Hazlitt. Eden Rapids, just a week after a double overtime win over Ionia, is at Fowlerville. Grand Ledge at Okemos. Leslie at Stockbridge, of course, led by senior quarterback Mason G. Montgomery. He is must-see TV, who has completed 59 of 84 pass attempts for 816 yards and 13 TDs. Do your thing, Mason. Looking forward to that one tonight. Fowler at Fulton, Dansville at Serenet, and Bath at Pawamo, Westphalia, who features senior running back Jared Smith, who has racked up 527 rush yards and 8 TDs on 47 carries. Yes, we are now just a day away. The 12th-ranked Michigan State Spartans travel to South Bend to take on the 18th-ranked Notre Dame Fighting Irish on Saturday night with kickoff scheduled for 7:30 p.m. The Spartans beat Furman 28-13 during the first week and are coming off a bye, an odd week two bye. The Fighting Irish lost their first game at Texas 50-47 in double overtime. Notre Dame rebounded and beat Nevada 39-10 last weekend as Brian Kelly solved his quarterback situation and rolled with Deshaun Kaiser. Now, the Fighting Irish secondary is already thin as Nick Watkins is hurt for a few more weeks. Devin Butler is suspended, and cornerback Sean Crawford tore his Achilles on the first drive against Nevada. With a depleted secondary, Tyler O'Connor should be foaming at the mouth. Should be able to get something going through the air. Sixth-year linebacker Ed Davis should be back this weekend after being granted another year of eligibility from the NCAA. Davis will join linebackers John Reschke, Riley Bulla, and company. The Spartans are 7.5-point dogs, but thrive with a chip on the shoulder, folks. This should be a close one. We will break it down in the matter of minutes. The Michigan Wolverines will play host to the Colorado Buffaloes on Saturday and are expected to not only win but to roll over their opponent for the third straight week. Offense should be really aplenty as these two teams have combined for 214 points in the first two games. The Buffs, I love that, will be hungry trying to beat a ranked team for the first time under fourth-year coach Mike McIntyre. Now, Wilton Spate continues to be Jim Harbaugh's guy and has a 70% completion percentage with 457 yards. Colorado, like Michigan State, had their own last-second miracle last time they beat Michigan in 1994. Cordell Stewart threw a 64-yard Hail Mary to Michael Westbrook with no time left, lifting the Buffaloes to a 27-26 win. On that note, there's already been some pregame theatrics. Get this. The Michigan Wolverines, again, taking on the Colorado Buffaloes this Saturday at 3:30 p.m. This game features Jim Harbaugh's Wolverines, who are favored to win by 20 points. Most of the talk is surrounded around the the Buffalo depth chart. Michigan did not release a depth chart. Colorado did, though. But the sports information department had some fun with it. The depth chart features the likes of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at center, Elmer Fudd at quarterback, Bernie Sanders at free safety, Stewie and Peter Griffin at weak safety, and Happy Gilmore at punter, just to name a few. Now, unfortunately, Harbaugh did not find it as funny as folks like me did. Quote, I saw the depth chart. I was trying to imagine how many people sat around and how many hours they worked on that. We found studying last week's film of the opponent is the most accurate way of determining another team's depth chart. End quote. Jim, why so serious, dude? No matter who wins the game, college football fans really won this story. All right, all of a sudden, the American League wildcard race just got a little bit tighter as the Seattle Mariners are on an 8-game win streak and the New York Yankees had a 7-game win streak of their own last week. Not good news, I should say, for the Detroit Tigers. Now 2 games in back of the wild card, who head into Cleveland tonight at 7:10 p.m. to take on the Indians. The Tigers are a nightmarish 1-11 versus the Tribe this year. It should be a pitcher's duel with Cy Young candidate Corey Kluber on the mound for the Indians, and Rookie of the Year candidate Michael Fulmer on the mound for the Tigers. And some more baseball news here. Last night, the Chicago Cubs had the chance to secure the National League Central title for the first time since 2008. However, the Cubs faithful were not able to celebrate at Wrigley as the team lost 5-4 to the Brewers. But the Cubbies were still able to clinch the Central thanks to a 6-2 San Fran win over St. Louis. Chicago is the first team to land a place in the playoffs this year under the management of Joe Maddon, who has led his team to an MLB best 93-53 record with 16 games to play. Wow. The Cubs play the second game of a 4-game series versus Milwaukee today at 1:20 p.m., so less than 20 minutes. All right. The Detroit Lions host the Tennessee Titans at 1 p.m. on Sunday. The Lions fresh off a remarkable 39-35 week one victory against the Indianapolis Colts. The Titans lost their opening game against the Minnesota Vikings 25-16. The Lions look to start the season 2-0 for the first time since 2011. And last but not least, after an Indy Star report stated Michigan State doctor and former Team USA gymnastics physician Dr. Larry Nassar sexually abused 2 former gymnasts, the Lansing State Journal now reports more people are coming out and claiming abuse. Nassar remains employed by the university but was relieved of clinical and patient duties on August 30th. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you have anything on your sports noggin that you want to get out there on the air, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Or you can weigh in via Twitter at my Twitter handle of at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Without further ado, Let's start the show.
Notre Dame, Michigan State, the most anticipated, publicized, and discussed collegiate football game of the decade has finally arrived. Duffy Dougherty's undefeated and number two ranked Spartans clash head-on with Arapahsigian's undefeated and number one ranked Irish for the National Collegiate Championship. In the first quarter, Irish quarterback Terry Hanratty rolls away from the onrushing Spartans and completes a peg to Bob Gladio. But now fate plays a trick on Hanratty and Notre Dame. As the Irish passer turns the corner, big number 95, Bubba Smith, slams him down, causing a shoulder separation and forcing Coach Parsegian to go with Coley O'Brien at quarterback. After halting the Irish attack, Jimmy Ray and the Spartans take charge. Ray hits State's all-time top pass receiver, Gene Washington, on a 42-yard completion as the first period comes to an end. Camped in the Notre Dame 20, Ray calls on Regis Cavender, filling in for the injured Bob Apisa. Cavender plows through for 11 more yards. Three plays later, our slow-motion camera rolls as a sophomore fullback is asked to get the final yards. Regis Cavender falls into the end zone for the game's first touchdown. It's only the second time all season that Notre Dame has trailed an opponent. The Spartans move on top 7-0. Coley O'Brien calls on Dave Haley, but the junior halfback is caught in a Spartan blitz for an 8-yard loss. Unable to move the ball on three downs, Joe Azzaro tries to win with a 41-yard field goal. It's long enough, but wide to the right. The collegiate football game of the decade ends in a 10-10 tie. It's a tremendous letdown for everyone as the long-awaited clash of giants fails to produce a winner.
And that is how we start this afternoon edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host, Al Martin. And I know many of our listeners out there who live in the mid-Michigan area are prepping as we speak for the big game. It has been the talk of the town all week as Michigan State gets back to work after a week to bye. Yeah, a bit of an odd place to have a bye week, right? And they now hit the road to South Bend to take on a pretty historic program in the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, a team that features one of the most exciting players in the college game right now, Mr. DeShone Kizer. So, of course, throughout this entire hour, we will be taking your calls as we customarily do. Pick up that phone and dial 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527, as we will be providing you all with a wall-to-wall preview of the Spartans and Fighting Irish. Going to be a fun one, folks. Everyone chomping at the bit just to see Spartan football back in action. So let's break it down right now, folks. Right now, I want to invite to the show as well to engage in this discussion, not only our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, hailing from Nolens, Isaac Constance. Isaac, first off, how you doing, my friend? You all right?
Doing well, yeah. Excited for the game, the first big one of the season. And, boy, it sets up to be a great matchup. Notre Dame, I have never been to South Bend. I was really trying to look into getting tickets and things like that. But I was looking, and the tickets are at least $170 apiece. I was wondering if it was an anomaly of some sort, but that's every single game in Notre Dame Stadium.
Well, hey, man, that's a drop in the bucket for you. You're big-time, big baller shot caller. You don't have the bread to throw down on that one? No?
I've spent too much on records and jewelry recently, you know.
Yeah, I dig it. Well, I tell you what, we actually have someone in the studio right now who has a ticket to that game tomorrow, okay? And I want to invite, of course, we throughout this entire week, we've been introducing you all to our fantastic production assistants throughout the semester who will be providing content for WKAR's Current Sports on the web, on our airwaves, on Current Sports radio and television. And we have three of them that will be providing a bit of a preview on that Michigan State and Notre Dame game. It is truly my pleasure to welcome to the show now, Zach Swiezicki. Did I nail it, Zach?
Perfect.
There we go. I was nervous about that name. I've been anal about it since we started the show today. But Zach, welcome to the show. Also, Griffin Wasik. Griffin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Al. How are you?
I am blessed, my man. And also, we have another Zach in the house too. Zach Barnes. Zach, how are you doing, my friend?
Little easier to get, right?
Zach, yeah.
Than Swiezicki.
Exactly.
thanks for having me on, Al.
Well, and Zach, you said you know everybody calls you Swy.
Yeah.
Back at home, okay.
Yeah,
yeah. So we may just roll with that from now on.
Yeah,
all right.
Works.
But it's a pleasure to have you three with us throughout this semester, and looking forward to the content that you all will bring to the fold. And I want to start with Griffin here because, as I mentioned, I mean, Isaac, you're not laying down the money to go to tomorrow night's game, but Griffin, you actually have a ticket to that game out in South Bend, am I right?
Yes, I do. I bought it a couple months ago for only $150, so figured it was a no-brainer. Got to see the Spartans play in South Bend. Notre Dame's a great campus, great stadium, so should be a good time.
How are the seats? I'm curious.
I'm pretty sure they're going to be the nosebleeds, but at least I'm in the stadium.
At least you're in the house,
yep.
And that's all that matters. Well, let's dive right into this thing because, as I stated, I mean, this is really an odd game for Michigan State, seeing as though they had a week to bye. And you know, you want to start the year off in a bit of a rhythm, and you play firm, and you have a bit of an uninspired effort in the eyes of most in that game. And you're chomping at the bit to get back, but you have to wait 2 weeks to do so. And you have to do it on the road against a Notre Dame team that has weapons everywhere on the football field. Now, I want to start, for me, when breaking down this game, you know, because I've heard his name brought up many, many times, and Mark D'Antonio addressed it in his weekly press conference that was held on Tuesday morning at Spartan Stadium. But everyone seems to be calling out Mr. Darian Hicks, cornerback, senior corner for the Michigan State football team, because Darian did not have a great game to start against Furman, you know. So right now, a big conversation is whether or not Hicks can rebound and how will he hold up against those Notre Dame receivers. Now, you know, I actually went back earlier this week and I wanted to really break down if it was really as worse as many people thought it was, if Hicks's performance was really that bad. But I got to say, when you really break down how Hicks covered in that game, in my opinion, I thought Hicks played pretty well. And again, I'm going to get a few side eyes when I say that. If you look at his pass interference calls, Hicks had great positioning, but just needed to really just turn his head on the play to make a play on the football. If he does that, we have a completely different dialogue when discussing Darian Hicks. Nonetheless, it is going to be very tough for him to go up against a wide receiver like Equanimeous. I love that name, right? Talk about names.
Yeah.
Equanimeous St. Brown, who last week had 11 catches for 160 yards, and two touchdowns. So, you know, how that Michigan State secondary performs against a quarterback like DeShone Kizer, who went 30 for 42 last week, a 71% completion rating, as well as 371 yards and seven touchdowns. Kizer threw for seven touchdowns last week. That is going to be a key area to break down. I'm going to give an early prediction before I start to break down my other areas here. Again, I know we're here on the campus of Michigan State University, but I pride myself in saying that Current Sports keeps it real, and I always keep it 100, all right? I think Michigan State loses in a close game, though. Right now, as I stated in our Queen of Headliners, right now Michigan State is a 7.5-point underdog. I think it's going to be close, at least a touchdown game, but I don't know how Michigan State, coming off a week two bye, off, again, an uninspired effort against Furman, they're thrown right back into the fire. They have to go on the road to play a Notre Dame team that's already in a groove. You put Tyler O'Connor in that kind of position early in the year, I'm not buying the Spartans to pull this one out on the road. Let's start. Griffin, what's your thoughts on this game?
Well, I agree with you. I think it's going to be a hard-fought, close game. As of right now, I personally don't think Tyler O'Connor can get it done through the air. I mean, you've seen it in years past with Connor Cook and Kirk Cousins and pretty much all these great Spartan quarterbacks go into South Bend and they just can't get it done. But I do think L.J. Scott will go off. He's, in my opinion, by far the best running back we have.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, like you said earlier, I think Notre Dame and DeShone Kizer are going to pick on Hicks. Because, I mean, you don't throw at Cox, you don't throw at Copeland. You see Hicks out there and you're like, okay, we can pick him, we can go deep, and I think that's going to be a real weakness.
That is, and going back to your point about L.J. Scott, I mean, L.J. Scott, when you evaluate his numbers in week one, L.J. Scott had 20 carries, 105 yards, one touchdown. I mean, he clearly separated himself from the rest of the pack when you talk about that three-headed monster in the backfield. I think it's essential for L.J. Scott to have a big game to put a bit to really alleviate some of the pressure off of the shoulders of Tyler O'Connor. If you have a balanced attack, the Spartans will certainly have a chance in that game tomorrow night. Let's go with Zach Barnes. Zach, what are your thoughts on this game? Because I think you're the only one in this studio, at least right now, that is actually choosing Sparty to pull out the dub.
Who would have thought in East Lansing I'd be the only one picking Michigan State? Al, everything you're saying is firing me up right now. It's like you got to the Hicks point.
Mm-hmm.
So you like Notre Dame's weapons. I disagree, man. They lost a lot of talent. You know, you lost Fuller. You lost C.J. Promise. This is not the same athletic team Notre Dame were used to. And I've actually been on the record multiple times saying this is a very overrated Notre Dame team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see Texas skyrocket in the polls. I don't think this is going to be a very good win in the long run. I think Michigan State is going to be capable of stopping that offense. At least, you know, you did talk about Hicks. I think they will attack him easily. With that, I think he needs to lay the lumber, as they say, mm-hmm. be an enforcer, because that's what he does. He lays the big hits, but easily he will get burned. I think that's going to be the biggest issue. They won't attack Copeland, like Griffin was saying. Linebackers will do just fine. I just worry about up front. You know, that D-line was not good. You know,
against Furman.
Yeah, against Furman.
Yeah.
And now, granted, Notre Dame lost three offensive linemen last year. Mm-hmm. But even then, how are they going to stop DeShone Kizer? How are they going to stop Josh Adams? You know, the Notre Dame rushing attack. That's where I worry. Defensively, Notre Dame doesn't threaten me at all. You know, I think even with Tyler O'Connor, I think they should try to go through the air. Nevada was able to do it. Texas was able to do it. If Tyler O'Connor takes Monty Medeiros long, takes Donnie Corey long, I think you can do that. And like also Griffin was saying, I think L.J. Scott's going to have a field day with that defense. I don't think it's a very good Notre Dame defense. So it'll be interesting to see. Both teams, in my opinion, have very evident flaws. I just think Michigan State is the better team in this case, and I think the better coach team as well.
And, Zach, you bring up some great points there. I mean, when you talk about in the trenches, and actually Indy lost four offensive linemen if you look at last year, including sixth overall pick Ronnie Stanley. And how about Texas? I mean, even though both teams were able to put up a bunch of points against each respective defenses, but Texas had five tackles for loss, including three sacks on DeShone Kizer. So, you know, when you evaluate that just in the trenches battle, you have to be encouraged if you are a Michigan State fan, without a doubt. But, you know, you look at that defensive line for Michigan State. Again, I love Malik McDowell. Absolutely love him. He is a clear stud, but I have question marks when it comes to the other. When it comes to the rest of the pack,
Evan Jones was against a freshman on Furman, freshman on Furman, and could not get by him.
Exactly. I hear you. You're preaching to the choir, man. And I think when you look at the leading rusher for the Irish, I mean, running back Josh Adams, he had 21 carries, 149 yards. Granted, no touchdowns, but he's a guy that if you give him some space, he can really shake loose and make some things happen. So you bring up a lot of fair points there. Let's go with Zach Swiezicki. Zach, what do you think about this whole matchup?
I think it's going to be a very close game. You bring up the point in the defensive line. If the Spartans can't get pressure on DeShone Kizer, we've seen the secondary. It has holes. It's attackable. And DeShone Kizer has a great arm. He's in the Heisman conversation. If Brian Kelly would have started him against Texas and stuck with him, they'd probably be 2-0 right now. The Notre Dame secondary is also attackable, but we haven't seen that from Tyler O'Connor. We don't know if the offensive coordinator for the Spartans is going to be able to put his trust into Tyler O'Connor and let him throw the ball down the field. You know, if he can, they're looking at starting a freshman at corner for the Notre Dame.
They are, yeah.
I think L.J. Scott, like you guys have said, we're all in agreement he's going to have a good game. And the Spartans this year, I think they're going to have a very balanced attack for O'Connor to have success. I think LJ will get his. He'll get his yards, touches. But it's all going to come down to O'Connor, and I don't know if I can trust him.
I tell you what, another name I want to bring to the fold as well, Monty Medeiros. I think he has quickly become now – well, again, and I want to really center my comments when it comes to bringing up what Monty Medeiros is able to do against Furman. Again, it's only game one. It's the beginning of the year, but he looks solid when he was out there against Furman. It looks – he's a great route runner. He's got a lot of speed. He's got a great – feel for the game of football when he's out there. And I think Monty has a potential. If Tyler can settle in and they get that balance attack, Monty can become a prime receiver for the Spartans tomorrow night. Also, I'm looking to see what Donnie Corley can do. I mean, I've heard a lot of hype about him in preseason training camp. And Donnie Corley, I got a chance to watch him in high school. He is a stud. I'm wondering whether or not that Notre Dame secondary is going to throw extra bodies at him, especially if he gets going early. So we'll see. Isaac, what do you think, my man?
Well, I say we cool the embers a little bit on Donnie Corley for the sole reason that he didn't get all those touches against Furman. That's where I expected MSU to play with their creativity, use his versatility. Also in the return game, possibly, as D'Antonio mentioned that as an option. So I say we cool the embers on Corley. However, I think Monty Medeiros is going to be a threat going forward. I'm interested to just see what sort of leash that Tyler O'Connor has on this game. Because against Ohio State last year, he threw 12 passes. Mm-hmm. He completed 9. He got 72 yards. That's fantastic. But at the same time, it's 12 passes. You're not going to beat Notre Dame with a quarterback who throws 12 passes. I think this will be more of an offensively oriented game with both defenses having gaping holes and voids that both other sides can attack. So I think we see O'Connor maybe start to be let loose a little bit more from this team. I think we see D'Antonio take a few deep shots to Monty Medeiros. I think that's the name to watch also. And LJ Scott, that is the matchup. A name on the Notre Dame defensive line, Isaac Rochelle, is fantastic. So seeing those two go at each other, D-tackle versus running back, that'll be a really interesting one to see who can control the line, control the holes of the offense. And from there, we'll see how it goes. I, too, have Notre Dame winning this game, though. I think their offense overpowers MSU at the end of the day. I've got ND winning 35-28.
That's a great segue into my next point before we hit our first break here. I want scores, guys. I'm going with Notre Dame 27-23. Let's go with Griffin. What do you got?
Putting it on me right now. I agree. I think it's going to be close. I'm going to go Notre Dame 27, MSU 24.
Okay, so one point difference between you and I. All right.
You're killing me with the scores. Throwing me on the spot here. I do disagree with the line. I think 7.5 is way too favorable to Notre Dame.
I bet that all day.
So I actually have MSU 27-24.
Okay.
I think it's going to be tight, but I think there is going to be enough scoring. I think that they'll take advantage of bad defenses.
Zach?
I would bet the spread, too, for MSU. But Notre Dame, I think it's going to come down to the line. I was like 31-28 Notre Dame.
Also, I have to address this, the elephant in the room that we haven't brought up. Michigan State had way too many penalties in game one. I understand. Yeah. Game one, but those penalties really hurt the Spartans in terms of field position against Furman. So it comes down to discipline. It's game one, but you play game two on the road after a bye week, and you look at all those penalties. I mean, they had like something like 166 yards. In penalties, Isaac. That's nuts to me.
And the other thing is we're going to see the X factors in this game. You don't get to see that against Furman. This game you get to see who in the linebacking corps steps up, separates themselves from the rest of the group. Because Ed Davis, correct me if I'm wrong, but he is back this game.
He's playing.
Instant
He's,
playmaker. We'll see what he does.
Don't expect Ed Davis to be
I'm
lights out,
you.
Though. This is his first game
you.
Back in I don't know how long. You know, he got injured in preseason training camp last year. Ed Davis is going to be worked in periodically. He's not going to be Superman when he first gets out there.
It's
going to
be a reserve
that.
Start. I'm with you.
Exactly.
So.
All right, our listeners, what do you think? Call in. Give us a score prediction. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. If you're sneaking behind the boss's back and actually listening while you're on the job, you can weigh in via social media, all right? Facebook.com/currentsports. I actually had a listener do that last week, guys. I forgot to tell you about that, which is pretty cool.
That is awesome.
Also, even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR or at WKAR_sports. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite not one, but two guests to this afternoon show. That's right. We'll invite Dr. Jeffrey S. Kuchar, as well as journalist Joanne C. Gerstner, as they break down concussions in the world of sports. They have a new book entitled Back in the Game, Why Concussion Doesn't Have to End Your Athletic Career. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, we are taking your calls and reading your comments live here on the air as we customarily do each and every weekday afternoon. Again, weigh in by picking up the phone, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527, facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet me at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. We're going to switch the mood right now. Again, talking Indy, MSU. Want to get your thoughts and predictions on that. Even the Michigan and Colorado game that will take place tomorrow afternoon as well. But we're going to talk concussions. Now, it is a discussion that we've had many times here on the show, but it's always one that needs to continue because we're starting to learn more and more about this topic. It seems on the daily, okay? And we now invite two individuals who have certainly done their due diligence in really breaking down concussions as it relates to the world of sports. Right now, it is truly my pleasure to welcome to the show, really, a dear friend, and for the first time to the show, a man who is revered in the medical world, especially when talking about this subject, Jeffrey S. Kutcher, as well as journalist Joanne C. Gerstner. They have written a book entitled Back in the Game, Why Concussion Doesn't Have to End Your Athletic Career. First off, Jeff and Joanne, how you guys doing?
I'm good.
We're doing great, Al. Thanks for having us.
No problem at all. Now, I first off want to start open-ended here before we dive specifically into a few excerpts in this book. How did the interest of you both really peak in this area of concussions in the world of sports? And really, where did the inspiration come from to write this lovely piece of work?
Well, I can tell you, my experience started as a physician in the early 2000s. As a neurologist, somebody who took care of patients with brain injuries and diseases, I started looking at athletes. I played sports myself growing up. I had concussions playing hockey and saw back then that there was a huge need for my field for neurologists, people that know the brain, know injuries, and know how to take care of patients to get involved in athletic and the sports medicine. So really 2005, 2006, before this became a huge topic, I dedicated my professional life to improving the neurological care of athletes at all levels.
What about for you, Joanne?
Well, for me, being a sports journalist, I've had to write about concussion almost my whole career. I mean, in covering the Red Wings or Michigan State football, their guys have been concussed, and I never really felt I had a full understanding of what was going on. So I was lucky enough to win a fellowship at the University of Michigan. It's called the Nightwalls Fellowship, where I basically asked Dr. Kutcher if I could tag along with him for an entire year to learn about his clinic and what he was doing and how the athletes were being treated, diagnosed, and the issues that came with it. So out of that relationship and being lucky enough to really get on the inside of something that most journalists don't get to see came this book that's like, why don't we start a conversation? Because people come into his office and have questions about what they see in the media, or they think what's supposed to happen isn't aligning with what is happening. And then from my side as a journalist, you know, that's what we do. We, you know, hopefully spur discussions with good information.
Now, I want to dive into the book. And Joanne, as you know, I was up pretty late last night going through the book.
You were, yes,
and
you were.
Doing my homework, right?
I was impressed.
And I want to read an excerpt that I saw in the preface of the book. Now, I want to read this excerpt, so bear with me before I pose a question to you both. This comes, I'll just dive right into it. Quote, telling athletes they need to retire from their sports for any reason can lead to sleepless nights, anxiety, and depression. These problems can then lead to cognitive concerns described as fogginess or short-term memory problems. This is what I found particularly interesting about this excerpt. Patients who are prone to headaches will have those too. If these symptoms aren't examined carefully and critically, they could easily be blamed on a recent concussion. The patient's fate becomes sealed when it is assumed that all of their symptoms are from head trauma, ignoring the potential contributions from being forced to retire. I want to pose a question to you both, starting with you, Doc. How often are patients misdiagnosed with a concussion?
Ooh, that's a good question. A lot. In our clinic, weekly basis, every day, we're seeing somebody's been either misdiagnosed or mismanaged is also probably a very common problem. Because concussion diagnosis, you can get it right, you know, up front. But like that excerpt says, if you don't continue to evaluate those symptoms, you may miss the point that they've gone from concussion to something else.
Right.
And if you continue to treat people like they're concussed, they will not get better. And that happens all the time.
So, and Joanne, you can probably attest to this when really putting together this piece of work. I mean, there are other factors that weigh into depression and anxiety and so on and so forth. But how prone are people just to, especially what we're knowing and all the media coverage that this is getting, you know, how prone do you see individuals out there misdiagnose someone because, oh, you play sports? Well, those symptoms must be from a concussion. How often do you see that?
Well, we have the narrative that's been established that, you know, if you play football, you're going to get concussion. If you get concussion, you're going to get CTE and bad things will happen. And God forbid, you're going to kill yourself. I mean, there's been a lot of things that have been thrown together irresponsibly. And it's just really concerning because, you know, Google is, you know, jokingly, Dr. Google is one of the most powerful things. And people Google what's wrong with them and they, oh my gosh, I saw that Junior Seau had this happen to him. That's what's going to happen to me because I play football. Mm-hmm. And it's a false narrative and it's a dangerous narrative. And unfortunately, with movies like Concussion that people go see and think that it's canon, that it's real, that they don't have the information to sort things out and say, hey, this is entertainment. This is fact. This is we don't know. And that's the whole thing is we in the media have to be empowered more to say we don't know. Because a lot of things medicine and science doesn't know yet. So why do we have to know everything on the fly? Mm-hmm. We don't.
In chapter one, you cleared up some of the biggest myths and fears associated with concussion, saying, quote, the idea that every big hit or violent fall would create a concussion is inaccurate. Even the obvious cases are sometimes misleading. The reality is diagnosing a concussion is not as simple as watching a video clip or a report on ESPN. The camera can only give you so much, end quote. Now, how do you accurately, and this is a loaded question here with many layers, I know, but how do you accurately go about diagnosing a concussion in the game, Doc?
Well, the first thing I'll say is our job is not to diagnose a concussion during a game. Our job is to do the right thing for that player as it relates to safety. So the diagnosis of concussion can be confirmed the next day, or a diagnosis of something else can be confirmed the next day. During a game, we are acting in a triage manner to say, you know what, there's a concussion that's possible. Concussion is suspected. We're going to pull you out and evaluate you. But it's not all the time that we can say, at that moment, on the sidelines of a game, that you are concussed 100%. We're going to treat you like you are. So there's a subtle difference there. Getting at that is about being a physician, about actually doing a history, talking to a patient, doing an examination, taking information together. Now, obviously, in the sideline of a football game, you got to be quick about it and you have to be efficient. But you can get information to help you make a decision as to whether that person should continue on in the game or not.
Joanne, last night I'm sitting there watching the Thursday night football game while reading the book, of course, and Tyrod Taylor. You know, he took a hit, a really nasty hit, a gain of 5 yards and three guys come in the pile. And Tyrod goes off to the sidelines and, you know, he clearly wants to go back in. I mean, his hands are rubbing. He's like, I'm fine. I'm good. But they take him through the concussion protocol. He has to sit out, I think, one or two plays as Manuel comes in as his replacement. And they take him through the concussion protocol. Again, I want to throw this out to you. When the NFL proposed that this is how they're going to deal with concussions and take them through the concussion test, is it a foolproof method or No. is it leaky?
No, it's definitely not a foolproof method. And obviously, Dr. Kutcher can talk more expertly about this because he's been on the sidelines
exactly.
For Michigan. And it's unreasonable because, first of all, the guy that's being given the protocol, most of them say, I want to go back in, I'm fine. So are they giving you the right information that you can actually diagnose them? And number two, you know, concussion symptoms can develop over time. So what you're seeing in that time span might not be actually what you need. So keeping them out a little longer, it's not yes or no, red light, green light. We're not there yet. So when you hear the word protocol, that's probably not as ironclad and foolproof, to use your words, as we'd like it to be.
In that same token, Dr. Kutcher, well, I know you want to piggyback on that, but where do you see, do you think the NFL, that their concussion protocol is up to par? Is it, how accurate is it?
Well, I'll tell you 2 points. So one, you know, Joanne made the comment about guys saying, oh, I'm good, keep me on doc, I'm good to go.
Right.
Now, athletes will absolutely downplay symptoms to continue to play, but concussed individuals also don't know they're concussed. Mm-hmm. They're impaired, right? It's like,
right.
It's like asking somebody who's been drinking too much, hey, are you good to drive? It's the same concept. So
right.
You can't believe the person is just saying, I'm good to go. The other thing is people should realize that when you are a physician in that environment, so you've got medical staff, you've got a lot of people at your disposal and working with you, you evaluate a player, you put them back in the game. You're not saying, hey, thanks for coming to my clinic, come back and see me in a week. You're going to continue to evaluate that person while they're playing, the next time they're off on the sidelines, at halftime. It's a continued process.
Mm-hmm.
So those things are what we're dealing with in reality. The NFL protocol, the NHL protocols, all the protocols that are out there are continuing to evolve every single season. I help the NFLPA and the NHLPA both deal with these protocols in the offseason, and there has not been an offseason that I've been doing this for over a decade that we haven't made changes, try to improve it. And so I can't say it's up to par for some gold standard that we can't identify, but is it as good as it could be today right now? I think we're getting there, but again, I'm going to revisit it all the time.
What are some of those changes that you've seen?
Well, one of them, so NFL level for sure, now we have independent, they're called unaffiliated neurological consultants on the sidelines, people who are not affiliated with the team, that are there on the patient's behalf, advocates for the players to help work with the team physician who, while they're doing their job as a physician, they also work for the team. So the players need that level of comfort that there was somebody else there on their behalf alone. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that's happened. Having spotters in the press box that have the ability, like happened last night,
right,
to call down and stop the game, pull a guy, right? That's huge.
It is.
It's really huge. Of course, it didn't work in the first game of the season.
Right. Oh, with Cam Newton, I know, right? That was a crime.
So that's a great example of we put the things in place, but there's still the human aspect of it that things have to kind of work out. And there are a lot of other rules changes, of course, and things, and how we return players back to play safely, the protocols they have to go through, the people they have to see. They have to be cleared by a neurologist who's not affiliated with the team before they can go back to full contact. So there are a lot of things that are going on every year.
Folks, if you're just not joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Dr. Jeffrey S. Kutcher as well as Professor Joanne C. Gertzner as they have a new book entitled Back in the Game, Why Concussion Doesn't Have to End Your Athletic Career. If you have a question for both Dr. Kutcher as well as Professor Gerstner, please call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Now, you both also tackle a very cool chapter in the book where you dispel some of the myths that are out there surrounded around this subject. What are some of those myths surrounded around concussions? And when you look at it, you know, what are some of the myths that really grind your gears and make you say, wow, really? That is not accurate at all. When you hear them out in the media, in the newspaper, so on and so forth. Let's start with Joanne on this one.
Well, I can tell you the one that I still hear, which just really does make me shake my head. I hear this from my friends who have kids that are playing sports. Oh, well, he wasn't knocked unconscious, so he can't have a concussion. Well, the majority of concussions happen without a loss of consciousness. So, right. Yeah, you can still be concussed, but somehow that's still out there. And the whole, oh, it's just a knock to the head. They'll be fine. You know, it's like it's a matter of toughness. He can shake it off or she's fine. You know, look, she's still playing. No, she can still be concussed and playing. So that's not a good thing. Another thing, too, is that all concussions are the same, that you know, broken arm's a broken arm, great. But concussions, you know, Dr. Kutcher's got a great phrase. He says, you know, once you've seen a concussion, you've seen one concussion. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of understanding the uniqueness of the injury, the uniqueness of the brain, and the circumstances in which it happens. What's your favorite ones?
Well, I mean, Al, we could have a whole hour or two on this.
I'm sure. I'm
covering the myths. But just two that come to mind real quick. One is I would say the overemphasis on the number of concussions that have been diagnosed.
Okay.
I've had two. I've had three. That means the fourth one is going to end up with whatever.
Right.
The number of concussions is only the starting point of the conversation. And it is because each injury is unique, but also each individual is unique. It takes more injury to cause a clinical effect that we can label concussion in some person versus another. Mm-hmm. So let me just tell you what that means, right?
No,
so,
please, yeah.
So if you have somebody who's had five concussions, but every time they have a little bit of injury, the alarm bells go off and there are symptoms that are produced, right? That's one person versus somebody who, when they're injured, they never produce symptoms.
Wow. So you can have a concussion and have no symptoms?
Absolutely. You can have an injury and not produce symptoms. And think about what that means for our high school players that go to college and college players that go to pro. You're naturally selecting out for people who are being able to play and be injured and not produce symptoms. So who are you more worried about, right?
Right.
Now, there are some people who come in with one concussion, and it's obvious that they've had some big problems, and recommendation would be, you know, maybe you should try a different sport. You have people come in with five concussions, and the recommendation is completely different. So the oversimplification that the number is like some magic thing, right, that is complete myth, false, and it drives me crazy because I got to spend 20 minutes of every patient visit explaining that to people, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The second thing is the assumption that if you played sports and you're now in your 40s, 50s, or 60s, and you're having headaches or you're having mood problems or memory problems, it's because of sports. That, I mean, that's that not just sort of a, you know, misinformation kind of, you know, not getting it right kind of thing. That hurts people because what it does is they start assuming they've got a problem like CTE. They're assuming that they're damaged, that they're victims, and they don't seek appropriate care. They don't seek a comprehensive evaluation. You know, as an aside, I can't tell you how many CTE cases I've cured by doing a sleep study and finding people that, you know what, you have sleep apnea, you haven't slept in like 30 years, and you have some foggy thinking, some memory problems, some headaches, and all these, and depression. All those things are treatable things. Mm-hmm. But when people played sports, people stopped thinking. And they say, you know what? Sorry, your brain's gone. You're going to be the next Junior Seau. And this actually came to fruition about this time last year with the former NHL player Todd Ewan. Todd Ewan was a fighter, right? And he retired 7 or 8 years ago or so. I can't remember exactly when. And he started having some problems. He started having these problems that are propagated every day in the media about former players that have problems. He and his wife were very open about it in public, in the media, about they're worried he had CTE. Then they were convinced he had CTE, and he was having all these issues. They knew how his life would end. And sure enough, he took his own life in November. Mm-hmm. His brain was, he had donated it to University of Toronto, and they sent it there, and it was normal.
Oh, my goodness.
This is an NHL fighter, a veteran fighter, had a normal-looking brain at autopsy, was convinced he had CTE and killed himself. So tell me what led to his death more. Was it sports or was it the messaging?
Without a doubt, the messaging.
Right. And so that's the kind of complexity that my world is, right? I mean, there are definitely times, absolutely. We're not sitting here apologizing, saying football's safe and everybody's, you know, making big deal out of nothing. But what we're saying is, yeah, there are cases where, you know, getting hit over and over again, definitely bad for you, and have led to bad things. But there are cases where our assumptions have led to bad outcomes too.
Bottom line, folks, it is not that simple, which is why you got to get this book. All right. Now, Joanne, you had some very compelling interviews throughout this book. Can you talk about some of the people you talked to compose this?
Yeah, absolutely. We really want to get a wide range of athletic experiences. So one of the people that we talked to was Kate Markgraf from the U.S. national soccer team. She is from Bloomfield Hills and has been probably arguably one of the best defenders in the world for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, won the Olympics, won the World Cup. And she talks about how she basically learned to play with concussion and how, because of her position in soccer, being a defender, there were a lot of collisions. She's about 5'7", so she wasn't the biggest person on the field. And just about the culture that was around her with concussion, how she didn't want to let her team down, how she felt she had to be tough, mm-hmm. how, you know, depending on the circumstance, like an Olympics or a World Cup, you don't sit out. I mean, you go until you can't go anymore. And finally, what led to her retirement was that she was playing for the Chicago Sky in the Women's Professional League, and she knew she was concussed, but she could not tell her teammates herself, I can't play. When the doctor came to check on her to see she could be cleared, and he said, you can't go, she was relieved. It's like he took away the responsibility of her having to admit she had a concussion. So the psychological impact of being a teammate and wanting to be responsible can influence how athletes deal with their own medicine and their own health. And also, she was lucky enough to have a doctor with the Sky that was honest with her and said, hey, you're still not in a good place. You shouldn't be playing. At least he gave her the gift of some good medical diagnostics and stopped her from playing because she would have played. And so we've got her. We also have Eric Hippel, the former Detroit Lions quarterback, who is very open about, you know, his struggles with depression and, you know, how football, though, gave him stability and structure, that he had depression starting as a teenager. And being an athlete gave him a very powerful identity that kept him on the rails to some degree, and that when he retired and left the Lions, that's when things start accelerating. So, you know, we talk a lot about the athletic identity, how, you know, we're talking about the brain, we're talking about the soul, we're talking about your memories, your intelligence. It's very complex. So we really tried to reach out and, you know, talk to skiers, to talk to soccer players, to talk to a high school quarterback, to talk to coaches, to talk to parents. So we really tried to get the full spectrum that are involved in sports. And so you could see all the different nuances in concussion and how people are talking about it and, frankly, how we should better all discuss it together.
Now, throughout this conversation, we've brought up a few examples now of the what I call the Superman mentality. I mean, no athlete wants to leave a game. You know, they feel like they need to be out there to show that, hey, you know, I'm there for you guys. I'm tough. Do you feel like, though, the more and more we're learning about this subject, do you feel like that Superman mentality is slowly dissolving away, or is it increasing?
I would say it's slowly dissolving away.
It is.
Yeah, for sure. Just, you know, based on the number of athletes that now approach medical staff during a game, mm-hmm. you know, athletic trainers and or physicians, we're actually getting approached by guys saying, you know, I'm not feeling right.
So they're more open about it now.
Absolutely. I'm not saying it's great. It's perfect. We got a long way to go.
Right.
Never would have happened 10 years ago, though.
Not at all.
Or we're also seeing a lot more teammates looking out for each other.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Right. I mean, actually, before, when I first started doing this, an injured guy would be kind of hidden on the sideline. Like, the guys would kind of go around him, right? So that nobody could see him. The doctors couldn't get to him.
Right.
Now it's the opposite. It's like, you got to go see Doc.
That's a good thing. So there are positive outcomes as our knowledge increases on this topic. Before we get you guys out of here, I want you guys to talk to the parents out there right now who are listening, who have a little one who is playing a sport and they're worried about their son or daughter, you know, getting concussed while playing sports. What questions do you hope to answer that they have when they pick up a piece of work like this?
Well, I think the first thing is I hope they get a sense that every sport is different. Every sport has its own set of risks and rewards, mm-hmm. and every kid is different, right? So to completely write off a sport as being, I've never let my kid do this, I want people to make sure they're actually doing the thinking behind that statement and ask themselves, well, why does my kid want to play football or hockey or soccer? What do they get out of it? And it's not as easy as people think.
Right.
Right. There are things that each sport can teach, that each sport bring to an individual, that other sports can't. And so I would have that level of conversation with parents, or have parents have those level of conversations with the kids. Mm-hmm. But then the next thing is, parents should absolutely, first thing they should do is talk to coaches, right?
Like, right.
You know, the coach that's going to be in charge of that program, in charge of that team, and get a sense. How do you take, you know, how do you take this issue? And what's going to happen if my kid's suspected? And then also, I don't want parents to the first start to think about, like, who's the concussion expert in my community should be at the beginning of the season, not when my kid is hurt and we're kind of scrambling and try and find somebody.
So true. Joanne, what do you want parents to learn from this?
That you have a right to question. I mean, if you're looking at a sport for your child and you have questions about how a coach handles things, say, hey, what's your concussion protocol? If my son or daughter gets hurt, what are you going to do? And that question should have some really strong answers coming pretty quickly. If the answer is, I don't know, or we'll look into it, that should be a sign that they've not done the thinking that they need to do before the season starts. I would also stress, too, that parents should feel that they can be empowered by understanding what a concussion is, because there's mm-hmm. so much like, oh, I don't know what it is. And again, you know, my son wasn't knocked unconscious, so he can't be concussed. Really educate yourself how it looks and understand, too, if there is a concussion, you know, get proper medical treatment. Don't blow it off, but also don't act like everyone's going to die. I mean, there's kind of, you need to be calm. You need to be the parent in that situation. And it's a mutual education process that, you know, a dialogue with the coaches and with maybe hopefully an athletic trainer at the high school can be very valuable, but also talk with the athletes. Again, they need to be educated too. If you feel funny, say something. If you notice your teammate feels, you know, is acting strange or says, you know, they're dizzy or whatever, say something. Empower them to do right for themselves and for others.
So true. All right, final question here. How can folks out there get back in the game while concussion does not have to end your athletic career?
Well, you can go to Amazon.com. We're on there, and we're also at major bookstores. And like Schuller's here in Okemos and Lansing, they have us. So, and if they don't have us, ask for us. They'll get it for you.
Well, I tell you what, Dr. Kutcher and as well as Professor Gerstner, it has been a pleasure having you both on Current Sports. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
No,
thank
you're
you.
You're welcome, Mel. Thank you.
You got it. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this afternoon's Current Sports and this week's Current Sports by hitting you with Reflection Friday. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
All right, folks, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. If you're flipping through the dial and realize, hey, it's almost 2 o'clock, I missed the entire show, well, you know that you can catch each and every episode of Current Sports after it's aired on our website at WKAR.org. We just had a fantastic chat with Dr. Jeffrey S. Kutcher, as well as Professor Joanne C. Gerstner, as they have a new book out entitled Back in the Game, Why a Concussion Does Not Have to End Your Athletic Career. Fantastic chat, and a book that I think many parents out there who have a little one participating in athletics really needs to read. Well, 4 minutes left in the show. We love to end each and every week's Current Sports by reflecting on the week that was here on the show and beyond. We dub it Reflection Friday. All right, so we love to close out each and every Friday show by just looking back at the week here on our airwaves and beyond. I'll let you do the honors to start here, Isaac. Any memorable moments from this week's show or anything in the sporting world?
Well, I'll start off with actually a moment today because it is 2K Day, meaning it's the first day the NBA 2K16 drops, and I always think it's entertaining to watch how athletes react, how fans react, and I think it's really outrageous that you don't have an Xbox One, Al, so that could kick your butt whenever we play.
You know, that may be a good thing, because I may be glued to that thing all the time. I used to be a big, huge video game guy, man, but it's like, once you get into what my mom used to call the real world, it's like I don't have time for it.
No,
but
I know. I don't have time either.
I will say, though, I watch a lot of TV shows, and maybe I can use that time to maybe.
You watch you've got, what, seven going, you told me?
I do. I have a lot of them going, all right? And I need to cut down on that. But I may have to cop me an Xbox One because I heard that the new 2K is pretty, pretty good. And then it's got one of my favorite actors, Michael B. Jordan. He's a part of the story mode, I think. So that's a good one. But you know, clearly for me, though, Isaac, I think it's been very cool to see just how open people have been concerning the whole Colin Kaepernick, you know, national anthem issue. And I think it's keeping a dialogue that needs to continue when it comes to relations with law enforcement, local law enforcement, and African Americans, and anyone of any creed, any race. And it's just been interesting to see how that story has unfolded and the variances amounts of opinions that have been out there. Also, I'm looking forward to this Michigan State-Notre Dame game. We'll see what happens out in South Bend, but I just think it's a tall order for the Spartans to go on the road after coming off a week two bye and to beat a Notre Dame team that's already in a groove. So looking forward to the Lions. I think the Lions start the year 2-0, and I think they beat the Titans in the home opener at Ford Field. Brief thoughts on that game, Isaac?
Yeah, I think they win it as well. I also have to reflect on New York Jets beating the Buffalo Bills last night. Rex Ryan going down, the most narcissistic coach of any sports realm, maybe of all time. Really interesting one there. Also a scary moment because Tyrod Taylor, starting quarterback of the Bills, went out that game, and the NFL now has a great procedure, independent doctors checking out players. Talking about concussions, very important step forward.
Yeah, and we just talked about that moment with Taylor just now with Dr. Kutcher and Professor Gerstner as well. So, again, folks, catch each and every episode on WKAR.org after it airs. That's it for this week here on Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. We'll be back at it on Monday with Mr. Jay Vincent on the show. Have a great weekend, folks, and be easy, people.